Peace, peace, peace. What's going on, y'all? This is Ace. Welcome again to the Trep Life with Ace podcast, episode number 8. I'd like to thank you all for tuning in, of course. As always, it's much appreciated. I can feel the love. I've been getting plays. I know that you guys have been tuning in. So definitely, if you haven't already, please share with your friends, family, those of who you love. If you love them, you definitely want them to hear this information. I definitely appreciate the all the love and all the support that I've been getting, all the questions and suggestions and all those things are definitely well appreciated. So thanks again. Of course, not going to keep you guys long. It's going to be a pretty brief podcast, but I did want to touch on a couple of things that's been going around in our current events. And definitely one of the things that a lot of people have been talking about is the Ava DuVernay has directed, I believe she also produced this this Netflix special or Netflix series that speaks about the Central Park Five incident that happened back in New York City. And the name of it is When They See Us. When They See Us. There's a lot of pain that's behind this particular series. It's about, if you haven't already seen it or heard about it, it's actually about five young black men, and one I believe they call him a Latin X. And when growing up, we used to just call it, if you were Puerto Rican, we call you Puerto Rican. If you were Dominican, we call you Dominican. If you're Cuban, you call you Cuban. I believe this gentleman might have been a Puerto Rican kid, but nonetheless, brown skinned boys, no older than the age of 16, were accused and convicted, wrongly accused and wrongfully convicted of a brutal rape and assault of a young lady who was running or jogging in Central Park. I believe this was back in the 80s. And it was quite traumatic to watch. Very traumatic to watch, actually, to see how these young men were profiled by the police and the district attorney and the prosecutors, to see how they were treated, to see how they were pressured and some may say even tortured into confessing to a crime that they did not commit. And I tried watching, you know, the first episode, and it was painful to watch. And one of the things that I try to avoid is getting involved in things that are traumatic, that kind of take me out of the headspace that I prefer to be in. But I owe it to the sister Ava to, you know, at least give it a view, so it counts towards her streams. Or you know how that game is played, right? Just watch it, please. Even if you can't stand it, maybe you just want to put it on and step out of the room, just to give her the views that she deserves. But it was quite painful to watch. So if you haven't seen it, please check it out. So of course, what I have to do is I have to flip this into a lesson about entrepreneurship and a lesson about black wealth. And a lesson about rebuilding Black Wall Street and what black wealth means in situations like this. So these young men came from the inner city of New York, Harlem, to be exact. And they were young. I don't like to use the word they came up poor, right? We automatically stereotype young black folks to be poor, and that's just not fair because it ain't true. However, they didn't belong to well-off families that had access to certain privileges that others may have access to when it comes to defending themselves against or defending themselves in the law within the justice system. And these young men were just having a good time one night, just, you know, went out to have a good time. And you know, the one of the key terms that they used in there was that these kids were wilding out. And some of you might be familiar with Nick Cannon's show Wilding Out, right? It's just having fun. It really has nothing to do with committing crimes or anything to do with being malicious in any way. These were young men who just went out and they went to a park. And yeah, they may have been involved in harassing some bikers, or, you know, one person was injured because it came. I guess there was a confrontation and they ended up beating up somebody, assaulting someone. But nonetheless, they were charged with rape. Young boys, 14, 15, 16, charged with rape. And the district attorney or the prosecutor or the head person in charge of this particular investigation was a white woman named Linda. And she was very adamant about pinning this crime, and it was a violent crime, of course, but pinning this crime on these young men. And they had absolutely zero evidence. The only thing that they based this case on was confessions that these young men gave. And they gave these confessions under duress because they were being mistreated by the police. First of all, most of them didn't have their parents in the room, which was a violation of their rights. And they were beat up, starved. And then one kid didn't even know how to read, so much less be able to write down a confession. So these confessions were written down by the police officers during the interrogation. And it's so painful, man. It's crazy how they were so adamant with like pinning this crime on these young men and treated these young men like animals. And call them animals and call them thugs and call them savages and all these different things. And from the entrepreneurial standpoint, it really all boils down to this, y'all. If we as a community don't get our dollars up and get our wealth up, this will continue to happen, because this is not the only case that has happened. It's definitely probably not the only case that will happen. Of course, these young men were later exonerated of these crimes. The person who actually committed the crime came forward and confessed, and in that time, that person who had committed the crime had went on to commit other crimes and murdered other people. And the police were not concerned about catching that person. They were concerned with abusing the rights of these young men for the sake of what? Winning a case? For the sake of being able to say that they caught someone and they were able to indict and convict someone for this crime. I think it really boils down to the fact that they knew that they could get away with mistreating these young men in the way that they did. But let me ask a question. If in the community there were profitable businesses ran by individuals in that community who had some dollars that they could put behind this particular case, would the case have turned out to be different? Case in point, there's a man by the name of Donald Trump who paid $1 million to take out a full page ad in a New York City newspaper, whether it was the Daily Post or the New York Times. I can't remember to be exact. But anyway, he paid $1 million to put an ad in the paper to call for the death penalty of these five young men before a conviction had ever taken place. So we're talking about dollars, right? We're talking about public perception. We're talking about influence. We're still talking about wealth, y'all. Yes, this was an injustice, but it's still. Why is it that Donald Trump's ad was so important? It was important because it put in front of the faces of the public that these men were guilty before being proven as such. And that leads to the public, the public saying that if the public believes that what Donald Trump is asking for and putting that out. See, we're such a easily manipulated people. What they call it, I can't remember the term, it slips my mind, but the public judgment is something like that. Anyway, you know what I mean.
the court of public appeal. I don't know, whatever. In other words, if the public believe that they did it, then probably the jurors will believe that they did it because they are part of the public. And then that also feeds into the defense, excuse me, feeds into the prosecutor's case because public opinion says that they did it. What if we had 10 millionaires in that community each to put $1 million up in different publications and say that these young men are not guilty and that they deserve proper representation. They deserve high powered lawyers. They deserve all of these different things. If we had the money to do so, we would have done it. I truly believe that if there were enough of us in the community that had the dollars to put up to do such a thing, we would have done it. We would have. So it leads to this again, how I can flip this into a discussion about entrepreneurship. If you as a black business owner are not profitable enough to be able to put your dollars up to save our young people's lives when they're being wrongfully convicted of crimes, if you're not profitable enough to invest in the campaigns for those who are running to be a district attorney, or those who are, and these people are put on the ballot, y'all, like the mayor, whoever the governor might appoint. But hey, the governor got to be put in by people. We could put our dollars behind these politicians that we want to be in office and hold them accountable for the things that they do to us. It all comes back down to wealth, man. It comes back down to wealth. It is what it is. We cannot deny it. We cannot deny it. If more of us had those businesses where we were profitable enough to put that type of money up, we would have done so. And I truly believe, again, that the only way and the most, not the only way, but the most efficient and effective way of making sure that we build profitable businesses is by doing it online, taking advantage of e-commerce, taking advantage of being able to position your business to acquire customers all over the world without them stereotyping your business as a black-owned business, without them stereotyping you as a black business owner. All they care about is the product that they're receiving at the price they want to pay. That matters, y'all. It matters. It matters. It's painful to watch such a thing, but I truly believe that if we change our economic status, that if we empower each other as business owners to learn what it is that I'm speaking about, because I'm talking about a revolution in the way we look at black business, because a lot of us still look at black business as black business. And the truth is, we're just black people doing business, not black people doing black business. That's a fact. We need to look at it from more of a stand back a little bit and say, hey, I'm not a black business owner. I'm a business owner. I don't have a black business. I have a business. I don't just serve black people. I serve people. And then some might say, well, why wouldn't you want to serve the black community? The black community has needs that are not being met by other corporations. You know, they're like health and beauty products. You know, they don't care about the texture of our hair, so the products that they make don't really mean nothing to us. That's not true. I believe that if you make a product that could be used by black people, make the product. Because the truth is, black people still buying products that don't work for them. So if you build a business where your product is a product and it serves the needs of black people, black people will buy it without them having to be told that it's being served to them specifically. And in fact, you're probably better off doing it that way, where you're not making it a specific product for a specific group of people. It's a product that serves people. And people will buy it if it serves their particular need or want. Has nothing to do with their skin color. If you have a business that serves primarily the needs of black people, I can guarantee you, you can serve those products to people without being explicit about who it's there for. I guarantee that. Because you still out there buying L'Oreal. You still out there buying Gucci ain't made by black folk. You still out there buying it. And they tell you, hey, it ain't for you. It ain't for you, and you buying it. But when somebody says it is for you, you probably won't buy it because you've been brainwashed into believing that black is inferior. Let's change. We have to work on the psychology, y'all. I'm just being honest. I'm only telling the truth. If I said anything wrong, hit me up and let me know. I'm just telling the truth, y'all. Truth may hurt, but it's the facts, and facts don't lie. And the numbers don't lie about it either, because we're still out there spending $1.5 trillion a year on products that are not specifically and explicitly made for us. Those dollars are there. How about we build those businesses that serve not only us, but serves everyone else, so we can recapture the wealth that we rightfully deserve in our communities and in our greater black society. So it's important to try to get ahead and to try to avoid some of these atrocities that are committed against our young people and our people in general when it comes to the justice system. The justice system still runs on dollars because it's ran by politicians. Politicians elect and put attorneys in place. We have the private sector when it comes to defending. We have the public sector when it comes to prosecuting. We can influence both with dollars. It's only a fact, y'all. I ain't saying no lies. You know it is. You know it's the truth, y'all. So what does that mean? That means that we need to really start evaluating how we regain wealth in this society. Really start evaluating. Some of us have businesses that serve black people. Great. But the majority of us have businesses that can serve more than just black folk. I do know, of course, right? Yeah, there are products that are made specifically for black people. So why not target black people? But in your targeting, in your marketing, and in your message, you do not have to be so explicit. Because black people are not a monolith. We all don't believe and think the same things. We all have different views. If you go down to South Carolina, the black folk down there may think a little bit different from the folk in California, from the black people in New York City, from the black people in Atlanta, from the black people in Oklahoma, from the black people in Florida, from the black people in Wyoming, from the black people in Arizona. We don't all think the same. Stop putting us all in the box and thinking that if we market to black people, then we're doing the righteous thing. No, you're cutting yourself off. You're marginalizing yourself and cutting yourself off from a larger slice of the pie. You're cornering and limiting your customer base. I love my people. I love you so much. I'm going to tell you the truth. I can't lie. Those young men deserve better. Those young men deserve a high-powered lawyer to step up and make sure that they were treated justly when they were being prosecuted. If we had wealth behind them, could you imagine Donald Trump puts out an ad? Five of us come back and put out five ads, 10 ads. And those 10 ads counteract the damage that he's done in his ads. You understand? Difference can be made, y'all. We really can do it. We can do it. I believe we can. I know we can. And I got the blueprint. The blueprint is very simple. It's just taking a step back and reevaluating how you start your business, you fund your business, you present your business to the public, how you market your business. It's a simple thing, but it's something that we haven't really been taught, especially from the perspective that I'm coming from. You could go to Harvard Business School and learn about how to run a business, y'all. Of course you can. But so many of us black business owners are so focused on being black business owners. So many of us are so focused on having a black-owned business. So many of us are so focused on serving the black customer instead of just doing business to serve the customer. I believe that if we change that paradigm and we switch that focus, and it's easily done, because when it's done online, there's no black face behind the counter selling you a product. There's no stereotyping going on. There's no racism. None of that exists when somebody gets on the computer, types in, hey, I'm looking for this, and your website comes up. They see what it is that they're looking for, and they buy it. The color of your skin has no factor in that buying decision, because it's online. If you're a black business owner, you own a local brick and mortar store. Most likely, you probably own it inside the black community. Most likely, you probably have black folk working as the employees in that black business. And I guarantee you probably are. I'm not trying to generalize and say it's 100% for everybody, because that's not true. But the truth is, some of us are losing out on business because we're the face of our business. We just got to keep it 100, yo. Like, this is America we're talking about here. A long history of racism, stereotype, and bigotry going on in this country. Yo, I don't have to spill that over again, do I? I don't have to spell that out for you, do I? You know what it is that I'm talking about. Black folk and white folk and whoever else deem black businesses inferior. It is what it is. But if you had that business online, I'm going to keep hammering this point over and over and over, because that's what this podcast is all about. Showing how we can position ourselves to serve everyone or anyone, and to make sure that we capture that those dollars and pull in those profits that serve us. Millions of dollars, billions of dollars are being spent online every day. E-commerce is projected to grow 10% year over year over year for the next several years. It is expected to grow faster, of course, than local companies and local businesses. We're on the precipice now of e-commerce becoming the main avenue for people buying products that they want. We all go to stores and buy our stuff, but even the stores that we go to, many of them are offering programs now where you can order whatever it is that you want prior to you stepping into that store, even down to your groceries. So shout out to WeBuyBlack.com. I love what those gentlemen are doing. And that covers a certain group of us. But on the flip side, many more of us can have stores that are not explicitly designed to serve black people. And I would like for it to be that way. It's obvious why. The more people you have to sell your product to, the more profitable you will be. If you limit your product offering to 15% of the population, you are limiting your profitability. That's a simple math, y'all. Make your product available to 100% of the population, regardless of where they live, regardless of their cultural background, their ethnic background, the color of their skin, the color of their eyes. Regardless of all of those things, you serve these people, capture those dollars, bring it back into the community. Oh, man, how sweet it would be. How sweet it would be if before they even know it, 10, 20 years down the line, oh, man, we're doing some things. We'd be funding schools, scholarship programs, so we could fund these young people coming up as lawyers so that they could be available to be the defender of justice in our communities, right? Oh, man, how nice would that be, y'all? That'll be great. That'll be awesome, as they say, right? So that's all I wanted to say, y'all. If we build our businesses and we develop businesses that are more profitable, more sustainable, and doing so and making sure that it's done online, we can change the face of many of the ills that we suffer from in society, including injustices being dealt to us by the justice system. So that's what I got today. So make sure that y'all go check out When They See Us. I know it's traumatizing. It may be for some. But you know, make sure that you show support to what the sister Ava DuVernay is doing. Shout out to Netflix for allowing this program to be aired on their platform.
This is awesome, guys. It really is something that that I believe we can economically, if we change what we do economically, we can change so many other facets of society. So check that out. Definitely look me up at Trep Life Ace. You can find me everywhere. I look forward to hearing your questions, your concerns, your suggestions. You know, make sure you share this with your friends and family. And I'll talk to you guys later. Peace.